My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt, and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you are a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear, and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break, and stay retro. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and this week we've got the Soundstone Synergy in full effect. We've got Sean Douglas back again from the Kirby Conversations podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back, Darren. Good to be back.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. The Soundstone family, you know, you've got that golden ticket. So you're welcome anytime. You picked a few questions you wanted to ask again. So we're going to do our thing. But what's new in the Kirby Conversations world? What can you update listeners on this show with what you've been doing on your side of the tracks?
Well, obviously, Kirby Air Riders is a big deal. So we're going to be covering that a lot. There's a lot more to say about it. We haven't done any episodes that went into spoilers or anything that we would consider secrets yet, so we definitely want to cover those down the road. So plenty of Kirby stuff going on there. I think as we look ahead to 2026, there are more guests I want to have. I want to look into using our YouTube more and various things we're going to do to keep expanding the show in that way. And then I'm also looking forward next year to bringing a new show to Soundstone, which we've talked a little about this, but I'm looking at bringing a show about the what's sometimes referred to as the sixth generation of video games. I know that that labeling is controversial, so we could also just say it is a GameCube / Dreamcast and other systems of that same time oriented podcast or a podcast about video games in the late 90s and 2000s. But we don't really have a show like that in our network yet, and that's a generation of games that I really like. I particularly like the GameCube, so we're going to do a show about that. And I am busy with school right now, but I'll have winter break coming up and I'll be prime time to work on a new podcast and get some things ready to hopefully launch that in early 2026.
That's going to be really cool. I'm very excited for that. That is a generation of gaming that was big for me as well. I just did the, we're recording this in towards the mid-December. It'll be out probably towards the end of December-ish, but I had just released that solo episode of me rambling on about my PS2, how I acquired my PS2 story. And yeah, that whole generation was great. I mean, we also, my brother, he got his first job in the early 2000s, my older brother. And one of his first paychecks, he bought just a GameCube. We were just bored at home. And he was just like, "You want to go buy a GameCube?" I was like, yeah, well, why wouldn't I? So we drove down and picked it up with Metroid Prime, I think it came with. So it wasn't like necessarily a launch system for us or anything like that at all. But we had friends who had it at launch. But yeah, I just that generation, like going back and forth between the PS2 and GameCube stuff. Never really had an Xbox, but I did have plenty of love with the Dreamcast, but I always kind of isolate that to an island. But regardless, this is me long-winded way of me rambling on saying I have so many great memories of all those years of that generation. So I'm very excited to see this podcast take shape and I'm very excited to see it come to the Soundstone Network. So cool. Cook it up, Sean. Do some great work there. I'm excited for it.
Thanks. Yeah, and I'll definitely be asking you, too, about what you want to talk about on that show. You'll definitely be a part of it. I feel like you're a good person I could talk to about Shenmue.
Oh, love me some Shenmue. Yeah, love some Shenmue. Yeah, there were some inklings that I knew it was a long shot, but rumors that there may be a Shenmue 4 announcement at the Game Awards, which I was like, you know, that's not going to happen. But in the back of my mind, I was hoping to like open up a website the next morning and see like, oh, announced last night, Shenmue 4. But maybe one day. But love that series as well, too. Those are some great games.
I've never played Shenmue, which is one of the reasons why I think you'd be a good person to talk to about.
Ooh, it. Yeah, even
I'm hoping the show can also be a way for me to experience some of these games for the first time and go to people who maybe have a longer history with them and can really unpack them and sort of like those travel shows where people go around like trying the foods of different countries or whatever and interviewing the locals. I think that this can be kind of my experience to like interview the locals about Shenmue and whatever else they were playing back in the day or still are playing.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I played originally on the Dreamcast. I imported I bought a PAL copy of Shenmue 2 to try and play on the Dreamcast, but I couldn't import my save file from the North American copy to the PAL copy, so I was like trying to figure out how to like edit the hex values of my VMU save just to continue my game on. But eventually that was the small window of time I did have an Xbox was just because I wanted to play Shenmue 2 and got that through there. And then in that re-release they did a couple years back on the PS4, I got the platinum trophies for both Shenmue 1 and 2 and replayed them both and loved them again. So I'm all about that Shenmue life, but all about that games in that generation. I mean, they were just built a little different. They, you know, the scale and style of games were just expanding with the new 3D technologies, and then disk space gave them more creativity. And so you got just the oddest and weirdest of things mixed in with like, you know, what quote unquote AAA games, you know, as they start to make their own like carve out their own space for themselves. So it's a great era. So yes, keep me in the loop, and I'm excited. Cannot wait.
Yeah, it's an era that I think has aged really well too. It feels like you can really go back to a lot of those games, and they've just held up with so well, right? Without a lot of the rough edges that sometimes we get from older games. And that's not to say that Nintendo 64 games or Super Nintendo games or other games of other eras are not great to go back to. But there's something that feels like it's kind of the threshold of modernity in a way when you get to that generation.
Yeah.
I student teach in a seventh grade classroom right now, and I heard some seventh graders talking about the GameCube the other day. And it's like, it just remains relevant in its own weird ephemeral way. Like, there's something about it that feels very contemporary, even if it was from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
24 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's a long time ago. 2001. Okay. Well, let's jump into it. Let's do an icebreaker question. I've got one for you. Actually, I converted this from an old episode question. Let's just see if maybe you can have some fun with this one. But what is one of your least favorite games and one of your favorite gaming franchises? I'd love to hear what that could be. You know, we don't have to go to the Kirby well, but yeah.
I feel like I should... I want to go into things that aren't Kirby, just because people hear me talking about Kirby a lot.
Yeah.
And I do like plenty of other games, and podcasts like this are nice opportunities for people to hear about other things I'm interested outside of just Kirby. And my goat, like when I hear you asking people this question on your show, when I listen to it, my go-to answer kind of ties into what I was preparing to talk about today already. So I feel like I have to go with a backup to what is usually my go-to answer. My least favorite.
It's a head scratcher, huh?
So maybe I will just go into... No, I won't go into the thing I was going to talk about today. So I guess when I think about something like... Thinking about Street Fighter, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would necessarily say that, like... that I actively dislike any of the eras, right? But it's honestly, I think it's harder to go back to some of the earlier ones there. I think, I like Street Fighter Alpha 3, which I know is a game that we both really like.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a series where, like, sometimes some series, like, you could start with them right from the beginning. They've held up really well over the years. And that's a series where it is just, it's kind of rough to go back to the original Street Fighter, right? It's an interesting novelty. But that is definitely my least favorite in that series.
Yeah, I mean...
It's almost like a prototype for what's to come as opposed to a fully realized version of what that series would be.
Yeah, I've been recently reading through that. There's a book called Like a Hurricane, The Oral History of Street Fighter II. It was an article online. I forget what website, but Matt Leon is the writer of it. But it's put together... And into a really nice book, but you know, it's just a bunch of interviews of the folks behind the scenes from like making the games and everything. And when the original Street Fighter II was in arcades, obviously it was, you know, like a worldwide like phenomenon. Like people just were obsessed with it. But there were people who the reason they got into hyper fighting was there were third party like board modders who actually cracked the code to like modify the game speed themselves and everything. And so that's kind of what urged them and pushed them into creating hyper fighting more so than, you know, anything else. Is they were like, well, other people are profiting on us and modifying like our game. And, you know, we don't have like the control and the balance nor the financial reward of this. So like, let's just take this on ourselves. But yeah, playing those original, like even like the pre hyper fighting era, like how slow the pace of the game was. I mean, it wasn't slow at the time, but like now, like with how we all adapt and we gain skill and it's just a completely different like kind of input and response method. Like it's, yeah, they're totally different beasts going back to those older Street Fighter 2 games.
Interesting choice. Street Fighter 2 has held up like okay, I think. It's the very original Street Fighter that's like really a kind of relic of its time.
Oh, you're going all the way back. Okay.
Yeah, I think like the original, like it's interesting as a kind of origin point. It's almost like the bacteria in the petri dish that eventually grew into Street Fighter, right? But there is something that feels a little limited about it, or a lot limited about it, I think, compared to what it is today. Still fun to look back at.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, sorry to accidentally slightly disparage Street Fighter 2 potentially for some folks. Sean is not saying Street Fighter 2 is the least favorite, the original Street Fighter. Let's just make sure that's clear for listeners. I don't want you getting any hate mail.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did speak kind of broadly. I did say the earlier ones, right?
Yeah. In my head, to me, the series starts with Street Fighter 2. I know the original obviously exists, but like the folks that like the planner and the designer of those, they got headhunted from Capcom and went to work for SNK and created like, you know, Art of Fighting and things like that. So that's almost like spiritually, I feel like Street Fighter is more of like the original Street Fighter is more goes into that camp than the folks who created Street Fighter 2. But obviously it's the same spirit and same DNA and it came from Capcom and whatnot. So they're not related, obviously, but in my head, I always like separate those two out.
That is interesting because it has kind of an SNK feel.
Yeah, that original one. Yeah.
If I think about it, like.
Cool. Well, that's a fun one. I love talking Street Fighter. I love talking Capcom, you know, love Capcom so much. They, you know, sometimes legally ask me to not talk about them. So thank you, Capcom. the question for today, though. We'll see. And I'd be curious to see where maybe you were going to be heading in this direction with this question anyway, but, what is the game that you think gets it just right? So, I know I've asked questions like, what is a game you consider the greatest of all time or, you know, things like that, or an underappreciated game that doesn't get enough attention. But this is to me I like to frame this question differently because it doesn't have to be a perfect game, but maybe a game that just kind of speaks to you and, you know, it's just the pacing, the rhythm, the balance, the style, just the whole like atmosphere of it. Like, you know, something that when it gets it right, like, you know, it might not be perfect, but it, you know, maybe it's just your jam. So what is a game for you that you think gets it just right, Sean?
So the game I chose for this is Mega Man X4, which I think is a game you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been covered in 32-bit library.
Yep.
For me, that's just, it's kind of the equivalent of like a no-skip music album or something. Like, it's just a game where they got all the bosses right, they got all the weapons right, all the stages are interesting. And I'm a fan of Mega Man X as a series in general, and Mega Man as a series in general. But I feel like with a lot of the games, there's usually at least like maybe one or two weapons that are a little less memorable, one or two bosses that are kind of just sort of okay or something. Like, it just feels like none of them quite get everything right in the way that Mega Man X4 does. It's one of my favorite video games of all time. It's one I can come back to time and time again. And it just really feels like everything really clicked, everything really connected. A lot of really good ideas came together in that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was a one of the first, that was the first technical, you know, X game on the PlayStation in North America. Oddly, they had X3 on PlayStation in like PAL territories, which is kind of weird. But yeah, that was a fun one. That's the first one you get to play as Zero, like properly, right? Don't you get to select between him or X outright from the start of the game? Am I confusing that with a different?
Yeah, you can play as both. Whereas in X3, you could just like call him in once in a while. But then in this one, it's really is like two kind of separate ways of going through the game, because X is getting the enemy abilities the way that he kind of normally would in a Mega Man game. And then Zero is just kind of adapting his own abilities in a different way, where like he might get the ability to like dash in the air differently or something. Like, he gets like modified in different ways, but it's not always like an exact. It's kind of spiritually inspired by the boss that you've defeated. Sometimes it's more of a direct power, but in other cases, it's just kind of a sort of spiritual connection to the boss. And he just levels up in just a very different way. And it's fun to go online or something and read through the discourse about like who's actually better and who's better for speed running. And Zero kind of seems weaker at first, but then he can actually get very powerful if you know how to use him, but he's just harder to use and it requires more specific techniques. And personally, I like playing as X better, but I think both are very fun. And it does add a lot of interesting longevity and depth to the game too, to just have those two entirely separate ways of playing through it, an entirely separate suite of abilities to get along the way.
Interesting. So what about this to you, like feels just right? Like, like the challenge, the pacing, the music, the style, like, what are those elements of X4 that you love the most?
I think this game is just really well constructed at its core. I forget the exact quote or something, but I think there's some quote about like The Great Gatsby is a book that's like built like a brick cigar store or something like that. And I feel like that's kind of like what I think of when I play this game. It's like this game is just like built like a really well-built architectural thing. I feel like all the levels were interesting along the way. And even if they are familiar types of levels we've seen, like an ice level and a volcano level and that sort of thing, they just seem like particularly interesting versions of those things. And the bosses have a lot of personality. They chose very interesting animals for the different Reploids, which is what they call the robot masters in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They chose an interesting set of animals. They've got a stingray. They've got a cyber peacock. They've got a mushroom. And in some of the later Mega Man X games, it seems like they're maybe struggling to try to think of new animals in certain ways. And they got weird in ways that were interesting, but also maybe just a little too weird sometimes. Not that you can really be too weird, but like later games had like a dung beetle and stuff. And it seemed like they were kind of struggling to come up with ideas sometimes. Whereas this feels like the sweet spot where they were cool animals, but it also didn't seem like they were just kind of like going with, they didn't feel like maybe like the B squad in the same way that some of the later ones do. When I think back to your earlier question about least favorite game and one of your favorite series, Mega Man X6 is a game that I find fascinating for just how quirky and inherently unfinished that game is.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels like you're playing a game that is just not ready, because it's not, because it was rushed through in like a year. And Keiji Inafune wasn't planning on making another Mega Man X game. And there's all this interesting kind of history behind it. So you can see all the ways in which it's just so rough around the edges. And certain mini-bosses are like repeated in certain levels to an almost like comical degree. And it's an interesting, I don't know, it feels like you're getting the experience to like play like an early version of, like you're getting early access to a game, but it's like, nope, that's the final version.
Yeah.
And then Mega Man X4 feels like the opposite of that. It feels just incredibly polished. I don't feel like any of the levels are, there's no like frustrating gimmicks or anything in any of the levels. If anything, it's kind of a game that's on the easier side, I think, as far as Mega Man games go. And it's also very generous, I think, with just giving you neat things to do. I think all of the abilities are fun to use and they feel very different from one another. And without spoiling anything, they give you unlimited ammo with your special abilities at one point. And they really just like let you, like they get out of your way in a lot of ways, which is really nice. They give you a lot of interesting things to do, and then they get out of your way to let you really embrace all those different powers. I just feel like it's very well built. I don't know, it's hard hard to maybe define exactly how it's getting it right, but it's getting it right by virtue of not really getting it wrong.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's sometimes like, sometimes you can't really define, you know, what it is. Something that just kind of like speaks to you. You play it and it's just like everything is just clicking. Like it's just on your wavelength, you know, and you know, it's hard to say. But no, Mega Man games, I love like the Mega Man series, the X series as well. So that's kind of fun. Like I enjoyed X4 quite a bit when I was younger. When did you originally kind of play it and discover it yourself? Like, did you get to play it like kind of back closer to its release, or was this, you know, at a later time, just like digging back into the series itself, or yeah, when did you first enjoy it?
Yeah, I did play it closer to when it first came out. So it was one of the first PlayStation games I got, and the memory that I have of it is kind of vague, but it like aligned with, I have a twin brother, and it's like nice having a twin brother to kind of cross check some of my old gaming memories with, because he was at least there too. And we both remember it as something that we got for Christmas, because we did get a PlayStation 1 year as a Christmas present. And I remember it being a little bit of a surprise in the sense that my father had asked if we wanted a PlayStation. And the way I remember it was that we were like happy with our Nintendo 64 and we had been kind of more of a Nintendo household. This would, we were in like fourth grade, I want to say. So this would have been maybe like 1998, I want something like that. Probably 1998. My father ended up getting it sort of anyway. And I was happy to get it, but was a little bit surprised because I don't think either of us were really like really, really asking for one necessarily. And so I think on some level, my father just thought it would be cool to have one too. And he didn't really play video games, but he liked watching us play them. And so in some ways, I kind of think of it as like, well, maybe he got it almost more, not like more for himself. It was definitely a gift, but maybe that was partially influenced that he just thought it would be cool to have a PlayStation 2. And that's sort of why he got one for the family in that way. And I think Mega Man X4 was one of the ones that we got that year for Christmas, because I remember it being one of the first PlayStation games I ever played. Mm. And as kids, we never beat it. And then coming back to it as an adult, I did eventually beat it as an adult. And it was one of those kind of nice moments to finally see the end of something you started as a kid and finally see what it was like all the way through. And it just continues to be one that I come back to every couple of years. It holds up. It's one of those games that kind of feels like coming home to you. It feels like, yeah, this is just very comfortable. This feels like me. This is what I think of video games as being. And it's not very long. It's easy to just hop back into and be like, yeah, that's Mega Man X4. Still good all these years later.
Who's your favorite boss? Do you have a number one favorite boss design in this game?
I mean, part of what I like about it is that they are so consistently interesting to me. I think Cyber Peacock is my favorite, just because it's such an unconventional animal combined with an unconventional theme. And in his level, you get these little obstacle courses where you're actually timed.
Oh, yeah.
And they're almost like little mini games. And that's not something you get very often in Mega Man X games. So the way his level is structured with these little games is very fun. Do you have a favorite Mega Man X for Reploid?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I like the larger sprites. What's the ice gorilla? Is this the gorilla guy? Which one's the ice
Frost
guy?
Frost Walrus.
Frost Walrus. No, he's a walrus. That's right. No. I like his like just large, chunky like sprite in this. You know, like I think that's what I liked about the X series, specifically as it was getting in like, you know, bigger hardware and everything. Taking advantage of like larger colors and you know, just like having more of like a design like look to them than just like characters who are kind of matching the same size and, you know, pixel counts of like, you know, the NES era like Mega Man games. But yeah, Frost Walrus just being like that really chunky sprite was kind of cool. Just something about that I really liked a lot.
Yeah, and you actually get dialogue with them, and they have different stories, and the story feels very slight. They exchange like two sentences with each other, and then they fight. But there is just a little bit more of a sense of these robots being characters that exist within a world. And when you go into their level, like you get a little description of like what their role is in the Reploid army and stuff.
Yeah.
So it feels just a little bit more realized than just kind of a random, someone made a bunch of robots and you're just checking them off the list. Like, they seem like characters that inhabit a world and are doing something other than just waiting in a room to fight you.
Yeah, no, I love that about that. Actually, coincidentally, the it was a Kickstarter, but it's hand-drawn game guides. Mega Man just came out. The NF Publishing is the publisher who did it, but it was actually officially licensed with Capcom. But Philip Summers, who's been on the show, was the artist who kind of helped put it together and everything. But in it, it's like, essentially, like, you know, reading through nostalgically like an old Nintendo Power where there's like a hand drawn like map, or, you know, the hand drawn like layout and like strategy essentially to get through a game, just done with a little bit of a modern edge. But he's got like all the robot masters, but also like what they were used for, you know, like Cutman being a weatherproof logging robot for deforestation, and like in like the little drawings he has for the world and what they did, like it makes sense where they're at. Like they were used, you know, they were used for good. They were used for things to kind of help the world and everything, but then they were just, you know, programmed and overwritten to become the villains and everything. So they all have these like obvious purposes and not just, you know, the bad guy in the room with a special power, you know, like you said. So I always loved the Mega Man story and the plot, even though you don't get it essentially, you know, in the games, like it always is in my head, like, you know, there was more to it and there was things going on, and I always like to read the instruction manual or find like nuggets, or like, you know, there's been comics over the years and stuff as well too that I've loved. But yeah, the Mega Man stuff's great. I just love Mega Man.
Yeah, sometimes just having like a little snippet of something is more powerful than trying to flesh out the whole thing, because you fill it in on your own then. And when you find a boss and they exchange like two sentences that make no sense out of context or something, and you're just kind of like, what is going on here? It does feel like you're sort of the fly on the wall to a conversation that like they understood each other, where you're like, okay, there's something going on here, but I don't know what it is. And now it's kind of mysterious. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I'm almost just sort of like eavesdropping on this conversation rather than it being something that was actually like intended for the player to know. sometimes the like less is more in those situations, mm-hmm. even if it is a little cryptic.
That's Mega Man. That's how it's always been kind of been done. And now we're going to be getting, what is it? Dual Override, you know, they announced. So a new Mega Man game I have high hopes for. So hopefully that'll be a cool thing. I don't think it's out until 2027, they said, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But it's weird to think it's going to be that far away. But I guess it's not too far. We're just about in 2026. Cool. Well, that's it. We answered the question. We did the Pixels and Polygons thing, Sean. Anything you want to plug or any last thoughts or anything before we wrap the episode?
Not really. I guess it's just, yeah, it feels like we've still kind of just scratched the surface, right? But I'm not sure that there's that much more to say other than just it endures as a great sort of Metroidvania almost kind of game. I don't know if you'd quite call it a Metroidvania, but a sort of non-linear platformer. Gives you plenty of things to do. It gives you some interesting decisions along the way too, where you do one of your like upgrades along the way, you get to choose between two when you play as X, and you can get this like stronger charge shot. I think they call it like the plasma shot or something, or you can choose to have like four stocks of charges that you charge up and then you can like save them.
And oh yeah,
there's
that's right.
Discourse too about whether you go with like the big stronger one or whether you save up for, but still have to use them individually. So I don't know if you recall playing or what you chose, but did you have a preference between the one big charge shot versus a stock of four?
The big charge shot, it would always be like, to me, that's how I was playing like the later Mega Man games anyway, like trying to run with it always like fully charged, you know, shot at all times. Even like in a lot of modern games, when you have like the option from like weapons, like, you know, if there's like a hand cannon or like a glass cannon style, like high damage, high risk, you know, type of weapon, I usually like to play as those type of things. So I definitely was the charge shot, you know, mentally, like that was just the type of like player I was or still am.
Yeah, I always liked the big charge shot. Like I felt like it was very definitively better. And then the more I've read about the decision, I know some people favor the stocks, and for certain speedrunning strategies, it's like it's actually better to do the stocks and stuff. So anyway, whenever a game gives you a decision like that, and I like that it lets you go back and swap out too. It's not like you get to make your decision, you can never go back. Mm-hmm. Like it lets you play with both and decide what works better, but you can only do one at a time.
But
whenever a game gives you a decision like that, right, it's just that extra wrinkle, that extra level of complexity. And it's interesting to see how people approach the same situation different ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you have I mean, I guess we can still talk more about it. Cyber Peacock was the potential like boss favorite, you know, was there a favorite stage overall you had in the game?
I mean, I do like the obstacle course. I like a lot of the things associated with that level. I liked his weapon too, with the reticle on the screen that you can aim around. Mm-hmm. It was just a very innovative weapon that felt very different from the other ones. I do also like the laboratory that Split Mushroom has too, with the scrolling effect in the background. This game does a lot of interesting things to kind of simulate 3D in it. And you get the sense that it is really kind of like they knew that they were like using this new hardware, but they also wanted to make like, you know, a pixel-based 2D game, and how they combine both of those sensibilities, I think really works. So there's a lot of interesting visual effects going on in the lab, and the weapon there is cool too. Mega Man being able to create this like double of himself that comes out is very interesting and weird and kind of vaguely supernatural, in a way that just feels different from the kinds of things you would normally get. Like it's not just a new kind of projectile. He's doing something to like astrally project his body somewhere else. Who knows what's going on there? But definitely a unique ability we don't really see him doing very often.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously having the foundation of that 16-bit era, like gameplay and like visual design, but like, you know, like, hey, what else can we do to like, you know, without breaking that foundation, but just enhance this and everything. So you got a higher fidelity, like musical score and everything with it too. So it helped the kind of music be, you know, a little bit more layered and in depth than what like the SNES could have offered and everything as well too. So yeah, without just enhancing some of like the scrolling and visual like flares they were able to add to that foundation, even adding like that higher quality audio kind of helped bump up the experience, I think, for people who were kind of like long running playing the Mega Man games prior to this, because they wouldn't try to bring the X series to 3D until, what was it, X7, right? That was the PS2 one.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it seems like they could have, well, I guess they did with Mega Man Legends. So I guess they tried 3D with that, but that's kind of a different sub series essentially from the X or the vanilla series itself.
The soundtrack is excellent. Yeah, we haven't really touched on that, but like, I think the opening song in the sort of the pregame level that they always kind of have at the beginning, where you get introduced to the story and fight some kind of big boss before you get to like your choosing your stages. The opening music for X's stage in that one is a really excellent song. But I think a lot of the music in this game is just really memorable, and the voice samples are memorable. Like when X gets down to like, you know, the lower part of his health bar, and he's like, "Time to get serious." Like, I feel like that quote has just really kind of stuck with me. It's like one of my favorite little video game quotes. Or Zero being like, "It's not over yet." Like, I feel like I'll just think about that sometimes in other situations where in other situations where something might be going wrong, or where I need to like focus more on something. Like, I'll think about X saying, "Time to get serious," and I'll think like, "Yeah, it's time to get serious with this thing."
That's funny. The internal, that voice whispering to you to motivate you to keep going with something tough. It's just Mega Man or X. Just kind of talking into your ear. That's fun. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, then I think that about does it. I guess we have a lot more to say about Mega Man. So we'll have to come back together and do like another Mega Man episode. Being Mega Man fans, I guess it would be just fun to kind of talk more about it. But yeah, y'all, you can check the show notes. You will see links to the Soundstone website, but you can also find Sean on social media. You can follow Kirby Conversations podcast on all the podcast platforms you want. But anything else you want people to be directed towards or to be aware of, Sean?
Do you know if this will post before the new year? Because we could mention the giveaway.
Oh, yeah. No, this will be before then. Yeah. So you've got the giveaway going for our YouTube channel. So, yeah, if you want to plug that, people can definitely take advantage of that.
Yeah. So we are trying to drive more people to the Soundstone YouTube channel as well. We've been posting a lot of our episodes there. And it is primarily audio content, but I would love to continue to expand that channel out into more video content. But that's going to be kind of based on how our listeners feel, right? So if we get more people gravitating to that, that's definitely a place I would want to put content as well. And we have a giveaway going right now where we're giving away $100 in Nintendo funds to people that subscribe to that channel. So all you have to do is just go to the Soundstone YouTube channel. I guess there's probably going to be a link somewhere or something with this episode.
Yeah, in the show notes, I will have that.
Yeah, if you hop into that link and subscribe to the channel, you'll be entered into a giveaway. Just make sure that you're account is public, and that there's some way for us to contact you, right? Either in your like channel contact information, or you know, it's synced with your social media in some way, because we do need to like let you know if you won.
Yeah,
but we'll randomly choose one of our subscribers at the start of the new year to win $100.
And we will that ends on we're gonna draw that on the first. You said, right?
Yeah, so come the new year. For New Year's, someone will get some Nintendo gift cards.
If you are listening to this, this should be December 26th, so hopefully you had a great Christmas day, but that means you've got a few days still to head over there and subscribe and check that out. Highly recommend it. We are also in the planning stages for a Soundstone Network kind of collaborative piece where we'll have like a bonus show That kind of like cycles through each of our channels as just a way to kind of unite all three of us or all three of our shows, you know, in like a kind of a big, you know, group setting. We're potentially going to have that be video, and that would be something that would be perfect. So you'll be able to find things like that on the YouTube channel. So as Sean mentioned, like, yes, right now it is a great way for those of you who like to listen to podcasts in our audio format, like through the web. Like, it's very easy for you to access it that way. But by subscribing, you'll also be able to find any of those cool extra bonus things and special things we do have that get cooked up in the future. So for sure, check that out.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Darren.
But yeah. All right then. Yeah. We will have you again, of course, on another episode. We will record that immediately after this. So you can let the cat out of the bag there, but that's how these things work. But thank you, Sean. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Have a good one.
Thanks. You too.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.